Welcome to another edition of the Habs 365 Draft Podcast, joined by Grant McCagg, as always. And Grant, it's been an interesting last 24 hours for you. You were on TSN 690 speaking to Tony Marinaro. It was some heated conversation. I really enjoyed the back and forth. I thought you handled yourself very nicely there with some direct inquiries, that's for sure. How did you feel that you were able to communicate your piece?
Yeah, I was a little more worked up than usual when I'm speaking with Tony. It's funny, the girlfriend said, I listened to some of your podcasts and you sounded like you were angry. Well, I guess a little on the defensive because you just get tired of the negative rhetoric, the narrative that that the Canadians have drafted poorly. I just think that that's something that's been said in the media a lot by national media especially and then by some in Quebec, and it gets said without really looking at the draft deeply as you have in the past and as I have. And I think when you do that and you weigh in all the factors that include, like, how do other teams draft?
Exactly.
Where you draft, how many draft picks you have, and all of that. I mean, you look at the percentages and the numbers, and when you do that, I think you can only come to the conclusion, if you're doing it fairly, that Timmins has done a pretty good drafting job.
I think the thing that, not only for the draft and the way you defended yourself for the article and beautifully laid it out, but on my side of the ledger with the Habs, too, one of the things I find that I'm saying to a lot of people who maybe are saying something like, my God, David Poile, he's so amazing, and I'll respond with, well, he's in, year 35, and he's been to the Stanley Cup final once and beyond the division final twice. In 35 years, he's had two successful seasons. So what I try to get across to people is look at the whole league. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the Canadians or Timmins or Bergevin, but look at the entire league and how there are struggles for GMs everywhere. You have to put it against everything for you to find fairness. And that's all I ever try to do. And you, both and I, come from journalistic backgrounds. Both have degrees in journalism, and all we do at the beginning of the day is start with, okay, let's be fair here, and end the day with the same sentence.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, somebody was tweeting yesterday that, they're comparing David Poile to Sam Pollock, and I mean, like it was pointed out, one Stanley Cup final in 35 years versus 9 Stanley Cups in 14 years, because he traded for PK. And gave up Olympic defenseman and made one cup final, he's in Sam Pollock's league. Like, let's just sit back and, let's damper the hyperbole a bit and not just look at what happened in the last 6 months and, Stanley Cup finals.
And another good example on top of that before I let you continue is Poile missed the playoffs for Nashville in his tenure in year 13 and year 14. Well, if he's Mark Bergevin in this city, I guarantee he doesn't get a chance to put it back together in year 15, right?
The 15-year plan.
They always
want to
year five here.
Yeah, the 15-year plan,
yeah.
Oh, no, there'd be a little bit of sarcasm there, I think, about the 15-year plan if it was Bergevin. 13 years in, that had, like, how many playoff series had he won? Like, just very few. Mm-hmm. And, top five picks. The Habs have had one pick inside the top four, since Doug Wickenheiser, they picked in the top four once. So, I mean.
And they got Alex Galchenyuk, who arguably is one of the three best players of the draft.
Right.
Forsberg or Morgan Riley. And then if you want to be critical, you could criticize everyone else who didn't get Philip Forsberg from 3 to 9.
Well,
or Morgan Riley from 3 to 8. You know what I mean? So there are a ton of
Griffin Reinhart.
Griffin Reinhardt, who was taken right
number
after.
Four.
I mean, and then not only was there a screw up with Griffin Reinhart, Then the Oilers general manager at the time went and he got him, who was already crappy, right?
Yeah.
He was already lousy. He already couldn't make it. The league is already showing that he was slow-footed in a changing league. And the Oilers said, you know what? Let's go get that crappy guy and give up what will end up being Matt Barzal. Right? And who's
you don't
the
like
idiot?
Him, do you?
I mean, I don't think Benjamin has one idiotic moment like that in his life. And I can find an idiotic moment like that on every general manager there is, except for maybe two or three.
And people are a little unfair with the hindsight thing as far as, oh, well, why didn't he go out and get a center? You know, why didn't they draft a center in 2013, 2000? Well, Galchenyuk was supposed to be that center. I mean, that was – he was a center. He was a 100-point scorer at 16. The thought was that he would develop defensively. Like, I mean, he didn't look – I honestly think he looked as good defensively when he was 16, 17 in the OHL as he's looked defensively ever since. Well,
yeah, it's weird. What happened there? Why did he not – because nobody, I mean, the junior has a different style, of course. They're just going out and having fun and getting more points, even though it has matured recently, of course. But back then, it was more so just go get me a bunch of points and prove your worth on that end of the ice. But there was nobody saying, hey, this guy's a complete dummy on the defensive end. Why did he not move forward there?
I think what happens is just like it happened with the Canadians, you see enough of it, and then you finally have to say enough's enough. Like, Beaulieu, Nathan's father, was the coach in Sarnia and put up with it at 16. They weren't winning, like, you know, anyways. But by the next year, by the time he was 18 and he still wasn't getting any better on the defensive end, they finally said, well, enough. We're putting you on the wing. And then it was, you know, they did the same thing with the U.S. at the World Juniors. They tried him at center, but said, whoa, he's not figuring this out here. So they put him on the wing in the World Juniors, and then he joins the Habs. Well, they started him off at the wing because that's what he was playing in junior, but certainly they gave him a few trials at first, you know. And, I mean, even his first real, obviously everybody points back to where he was one of the leading scorers at the time in the NHL before he got injured. And oh, we got a barking dog here. But as time went on and they didn't, you know, he didn't improve, but they finally, Therrien got tired of it. And Julian, well, it took him all of about 10 games, I think, to say enough.
No, it was less than that. It was maybe a game.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it was a game. It was really bad. Yeah, it was one or two tops. I remember it's like, wow, it didn't take. He lost his patience fast there.
Yeah. Well, we know that Claude likes his defensive centerman. I mean,
absolutely. And that's another thing, you know, just to digress for just a second, and I get your thoughts on this, because I don't think we're on the same page on that, because you haven't commented what I've commented on Twitter about it, but I felt as if Claude has obviously coached an extremely boring style of hockey this year. There's just absolutely nobody can dispute this. I watch all of the other games all around the league. I watch two a night generally. You probably watch more than that, but I have to scout too, so you watch a lot of junior. But my take on it is he coaches a very low event game because he has to. If he had a 15-16 event game instead of a 5 event game, I think he knows he can't stay in that game. So he coaches a really, really boring style. And my hope is, if he got the horses, that he would coach a more aggressive style.
Well, I think he's always kind of coached that way.
Do you think the game's changing? Can he get away with that?
No, I think he's got to adapt. And hopefully the Habs, you know, once they're officially out of the running here, which I think will happen probably in the next couple of weeks, where they'll say, I think they already are, they aren't saying it. Like, Bergeron wasn't going to, you know, people say, well, why didn't he say that you're a seller? Because you don't.
Stupid. Of course not.
You know,
can you imagine here since the last like, yeah, can you imagine getting up to the – I've said this before, but can you imagine getting up to the press conference on Sunday afternoon and going, well, anyway, so we're out of this, and we're telling all our players,
and disappointing season. But Jeff invites you to keep coming to these games that we admit mean nothing. And we're going to try to lose most of them because we like to draft higher. So anyway, thanks everyone for coming. Any questions? I mean, can you imagine that?
No, I can't.
But yet you've got these intelligent people supposedly saying, does he even know he's in this playoff race or not? Well, of course he knows. You know,
yeah, he gets
it. He needs to be 27 and 10 and doesn't have the horses. He gets it. Trust him. Yeah.
You don't show your hand. You don't show your hand. Of course not.
Grant, let's go back to the draft a second because I kind of pulled us away from that in the normal run of conversation. But I want to talk more about some of the things that Tony brought up and give you a chance to keep expanding on them. One of the things I noticed in McCarron's draft year and Sherbach's draft year, where they, and I don't know the exact number, you're kind of a genius that way, but I lose track of the numbers, but it was around 25, both of them. And if you look beyond 25 on both of them, I mean, there was essentially, like, there are no more players left. On one of the two, Shea Theodore was left, and I think that was McCarron. But then after that, I mean, it was like it's a barren wasteland of nobodies until the next best player, late in the second round, is actually another Timmins pick, Lehkonen. And then on the Sherbeck year, you've got nothing but a barren wasteland again after the Sherbeck pick. So you're sitting to yourself, how can they be critical of a guy who seems to have gotten the last player that had any skill available, except for maybe some fourth-round surprise like Parayko that everybody passed over 90 picks? So, you know, you really can't fault anyone, if you know what I'm understanding saying there.
No.
But I just don't understand the criticism of the guy who basically gets the last NHLer available in the draft because the Canadians were actually good the year before.
Yeah, it's people stating their opinions without actually even looking at the draft, which, you know, I mean, sure, you can state your opinion, but you're not looking at other teams, you're not looking at it fairly, you're not studying it. So it's ignorance is what it is, and unfortunately, a lot of people are a little lazy when it comes to that. They just rather just critique instead of, you know, truly looking at it fairly and doing a bit of homework. I'm a draft junkie, so of course, you know, I'm up on this stuff. It just, I don't have to go back and look. I remember because I freaking looked at it a thousand times and studied. And you know, you look at trends, you look at how are the other teams doing. You look at statistics, percentages of guys that make it, and Trevor has drafted just fine, and it's just, it gets irritating when you keep hearing the opposite.
Mm. It's hard to break a narrative, isn't it?
It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm having the same problems with Mark Bergevin, who, for some reason, as a defender of him, I am an apologist of him, even though I don't apologize for him on any mistakes that he makes, which I say readily what they are. But
yeah.
I'm not going to say them when they're not. But one of the first questions that I have for people when the draft is concerned, and everybody that's listening right now, you do the same thing, and I'm going to pause for about 5 seconds before Grant and I start talking again. What do you believe, audience, is the success rate of a draft pick in the NHL that he becomes a regular NHL player taken between 21 and 30 in the NHL? What do you think that number is? Would you say that player makes the league 80% of the time, 70% of the time, 65% of the time? The answer is actually, the actual answer is over a 12-year period that I studied and Grant studied it too, if you just look at their the regular season games that they play, whether they made it in the league or went into the AHL or didn't even go beyond juniors, it's only 50%, 5-0. But everyone thinks that Trevor Timmins, when he's had like one miss every 4 years, that he's bad. The truth is, he's actually elite if he got 3 out of 4, choosing 25, 26, 23, and 28. He was elite if he got 3 out of 4. Lousy would have been 1 out of 4 or 0 out of 4, because the percentage is 2 out of 4. And that's kind of what you're up against. You know what I mean?
Well, I looked at three drafts, and in two of them, 3 out of 10 made it as regular NHLers, 30%. And then the other one, it was 7 out of 10.
Right.
So
I did it over 12 years.
There are years where it's like 30%. And in those are the years where, not coincidentally, it's often a Hab pick was made in that year.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're just like one of three guys that did, well, how come the Hab guy didn't? Well, you know, 7 out of 10 didn't. So it's sometimes it's not a deep draft, and you can't.
Yeah, McCarron's year was 3 out of 10.
Can't make chicken shit out of chicken salad, I always say, you know. And
I think McCarron's year was 3 out of 10.
Chicken salad out of chicken shit, I guess.
Yeah, don't do the other way, okay, because it wouldn't be safety.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
McCarron's year, I think, was just 3 out of 10. But
right.
You know, that's why you do as many years as you can and you smooth it out. So I actually did between 2001 and 2013.
Right.
And
right.
I did it all the way down the line. Like, for instance, all of those years, the success rate of 1 through 5 is 95%. 6 through 10 is 80%. So if somebody says, well, I mean, there was a criticism even last night. Somebody said, well, how come he hasn't gotten the high-end elite talent, offensive talent? Well,
you're
those
lucky
are taken
you get an NHLer.
One, yes,
yeah.
Those are taken between 1 and 10. By the time
right.
the draft is Trevor's first pick, you're right, he's lucky to get a guy who makes the league, never
yeah.
mind an elite talent. The elite talent, well, every once in a while you get a Barzal who was taken, what, 14? 13, somewhere in there. But outside of the top 10, it's really, really rare. Really rare.
Yeah, it's frustrating, too, because, you know, there's people responding who you assume read the article, and then they say, well, you know, Timmins hasn't got a lot of top six forwards, and well, did you even read the article, you know? You don't, with the 25th pick in the draft, get – it's rare. You don't get mm-hmm. first-line players. You don't get top two defensemen with the 25th pick in the draft. It may be 1 out of 10 ends up being a first-line, first-pairing player, maybe.
Right, and in one draft recently, that'd be Brock Besner, right?
That'd be something where, you know, to go back and have a look and over those drafts and see. It wouldn't take that long. Just to see how many actually became first-line players. But I bet you it's not. If it's 20%, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, that'd be a number that I would look at.
I love that.
I can think of a couple off the top of my head. Besser, Kucherov, and he only got passed over so often because everybody – that was the year that nobody wanted Russians because everybody thought they weren't going to come.
Not Kucherov, but the centerman in Washington. Kucherov was a second-round pick. I mean, 15,
yeah, that's what I said. He was a second-rounder. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I'm thinking of
the
Russian centerman there. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the one that, you know, I mean, you could argue he may even only be second-line center on the Caps.
Right.
But,
because Backstrom,
you know,
who went 3 overall.
Right,
Michigan,
right.
1 overall. I mean, look at their first line. Look at everybody's first line. Stamkos,
yeah.
1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's pretty rare. Even it's tough to get a second liner in 20 to 25. But I think Juleson has a shot at that. I think Sherbach does. Paling, definitely. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been some – I think Timmins has done just fine with his late round first round picks. And then you look at when he did have a – top 10. Well, Sergachev, look at how he looks like it. He doesn't look like he shouldn't have been a top 10 pick. He looks like he should have been a top 5. So,
which is where you had him when you redrew the draft of last year.
Right. And same with Galchenyuk. He, if you redid the draft, you'd take him top 5. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, top 3 probably. So,
you'd
certainly take him over the guy that went first overall. Another Edmonton,
right.
Another good end.
All right, so let's look forward now then. We dissected the past here, and here's now, I think, where everybody's putting their minds these days is it's pretty obvious that Max Pacioretty is on the trading block. And this is the best piece that the Montreal Canadiens have to finally achieve that number one center. In your perfect world, realistically speaking, I mean, you know, don't give me Tavares for Pacioretty one for one here. Like, you know, you can sometimes get on Twitter. But in your realistic world, who is, well, give me, I don't know, as many as you can. Give me five options of who you see being the good fit.
Well, I don't know that you're going to get number one center for Pacioretty, you know. That might be a stretch, might be a bit of a hope.
Okay.
But certainly you can get maybe a prospect that you
would become a number one center?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I like teams aren't going to be trading their number one centers for Pacioretty, I don't think.
What? Okay, let me ask you then before you give me a bunch of prospects names, because I think that's what everybody wants to hear, those prospect names, to be honest. That's me judging the way Twitter goes. And the feedback, people want to hear these names, you and only you in some cases know. So let me get out the part that I actually know. What do you think Ryan Nugent Hopkins can be at his best?
Well, I mean, he...
Two?
In Montreal, he could be the number
one.
He
could be the
one.
Does he project out to be a number one on a good team? Or just on a team that has no centers?
Well, you can probably answer that even better than I, being a real Oilers fan. I think he could be a tremendous number two on a real.
Yeah, I think
really
he's a one and a half.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a pure one, if you're asking me. But I think he's a really damn good two, and he'd be the best, obviously, on the Canadiens by a country mile.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are teams that you kind of put me on the spot with this as far as, you know, pick five off the top of my head type thing. So I'm just kind of looking at the standings here now. Certainly Robert Thomas.
I wasn't actually talking about five in the NHL. I was talking about five overall. Five guys you like, you can see in the hole.
Right. No, well, even that, just off the top of my head, I'd have to think about it. But, I mean, like Robert Thomas obviously comes to mind for St. Louis. That, you know, that is one where... And, I mean, it's been brought up before. Obviously, if the Islanders were ever going to trade Tavares, I mean, it would take a heck of a lot more than Pacioretty, but that would be the starting point, right? You get, I mean, Pacioretty, maybe it ends up costing you Paling and pick and whatever, but that obviously Tavares would be you know, a thought that comes to mind as far as that. New Jersey has some good young, they just picked Hischier.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, maybe they're willing to part with one of the young Pavel Zacha or McLeod. I don't know that those guys become number one centers, but certainly got top two potential. Robert
I
Thomas
noticed
for
in,
sure in St. Louis.
Right,
go
and
ahead.
He went 20 or 21 last year, just ahead of Paling. And I think
right.
The Habs were actually hoping he would still be available.
Oh, yeah. I think they might have taken him.
Right. What about, I noticed in the ISS yesterday, they put out their list, and there was a centerman in there at around 7, and I've forgotten his name. Do you know who it might be? I don't think I've seen him on your list. Do you know who I'm speaking of, or have I opened a Pandora's box of us going, oh, I don't know. Do you know? I don't know.
Number 7 for this draft?
Yeah, coming up on the ISS list.
Oh, who knows what they've got at number 7.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I saw center and I was surprised because I've never seen center on any of your top 10 lists.
Oh, actually, I have two centers in there. I've got
who?
Barrett Hayton from Sault Ste. Marie and Isaac Lindstrom from the Swedish league.
Might have been him.
They've come up in the last month or so.
Yeah, I think it might have been him.
Into the top 10.
If they drafted around 5, would they take a chance on a center, or would it be passing on a much better defenseman?
Or winger, yeah. I mean, if Tkachuk's there at 5, I can't see them taking Hayton or Lindstrom ahead of him. There's needs at elite number, you know,
elite winger.
If it's an elite player, you take
elite
player.
Elite defenseman.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Washington built around Ovechkin, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can build around wingers. Winnipeg's building around Laine. I mean, you have to. Well, Sabina's pretty elite. Kachuk's pretty elite. They have, I think, if there's another need that they have other than the elite defenseman, of course, and the center, which are always deemed as the most valuable assets you can get, it's a Kachuk type, or even Zadina. I mean, but Kachuk, big kid, a power winger. When's the last time they had a true scoring power forward? It's just been forever. And I think that nobody's screening the goalie and that has size that can score from a foot out. It's just it's sorely lacking on this team where they win the shots on goal battle every night, but the goalie can see every shot and it's easy save. Well, that is a
well. Gallagher is screening well with his 5'10" frame.
yeah, he's screening in the midsection. Yeah, just like Desharnais used to.
My favorite was Desharnais screening Bishop. Does he know he's there?
Yeah.
That was their power play setup for
that
2 years.
That was the Tarian game plan.
I don't want to be the smart ass, but I'm not sure if that little fella is the right guy to screen Bishop.
Yeah.
I'm not the coach here. I'm not the coach. I'm just that little guy's like 5'4". It's just Bishop's not having any trouble here. Yeah. Anyway.
No, I used to say it all the time.
You mentioned a guy from Winnipeg in our conversations.
Yeah.
Do you think he's leading the American Hockey League in scoring or close to it? Do you think he as a package with Winnipeg with, you know, maybe another, maybe a first rounder or a second rounder or something like that, is a two-part package? Does that work?
Well, I thought perhaps, and I just, the more I've gotten back feedback from pro guys and stuff,
say his name for everybody, please. I've forgotten it.
Jack Roslovich.
Thank you.
I don't know that people think that there's a upside beyond second at the top, you know, third or second line center.
Okay.
And I think people are saying it can do better than that for Pacioretty. So, but, I mean, yeah, if you got couple other pieces with it, I think he's got top two upside. He's quite skilled and he's putting up points.
Do you like Roslovich better than Sherbak?
Well, I like that he's a center.
Right.
Sherbak, you know, two different positions.
But Sherbak has purer skills, doesn't he?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I think you also have to look at maybe, like, I look at Carolina as a possible fit, but it might be for that potential top pairing defenseman too. They've got a really good depth there with Jake Bean and Hayden Fleury, one of those two.
Oh, absolutely.
They were offered up in a deal for Pacioretty. I think that the Habs would look very seriously at it. And also Lindholm as well.
Those are amazing pieces. You think those are in the offing?
I don't know, but I mean,
they've got
Aho and they've got some really good young centermen in the system. Maybe if they want to go for it and they feel they need that kind of veteran winger, I think it would probably cost. It'd be tough to. I think it would be a one for one at best. Like, I don't think you'd get more than that because those are pretty valuable assets, you know.
Yes.
And young.
But I was going to say, if Carolina is ever going to go for it, it should be right now. I mean, they just, in fact, today got new ownership. That was finalized today. They held a news conference, if you missed it. And they are either in that final playoff spot or a point out of that final playoff spot. But, I mean, they're closer than they've been in an age. You know, new ownership. A chance for the first time in a decade to actually do something good that could excite the fan base. I mean, if ever you were going to give up a prospect for an already proven veteran to help your top six scoring, I mean, it's kind of pretty obvious, isn't it? It's as obvious, now that you've mentioned it to me,
as Ryan Nugent-Hopkins for Max Pacioretty, as the Oilers are the worst scoring team on the wing in the entire National Hockey League.
Right. But they don't look like they're going to get in, you know, at least Carolina's going for a playoff spot, right?
Yeah, yeah, and that's against it. That's against it for sure. But
you're getting older, you know?
Right, but they're getting older, but I don't think they think of themselves as a really rebuilding team. You know what I mean?
True.
They like, the more of a team that's like, oh, my God, we suck and we're going to suck for 3 to 5 years. Obviously, they don't make that deal, but this is a team that last year thought they were on the cusp. This year they're doing a lot of things wrong, special teams, terrible goaltending, brutally slow, especially on the wing where they're the worst team in the entire league. They could rewrite Pacioretty's contract. Being three deep with a third guy making $6 million at center is not wise. Strom can actually play center too. So, you know, they just – the balance on that team is wrong, and they could change it. And it would really improve the habit. I just see it as a no-brainer. But this Carolina is a no-brainer for them in terms of they've got the prospects in abundance, and they're finally on the cusp of doing something good with new ownership at the same time, who would love to start with something good.
Where are the Oilers' best top two young prospects? What position do they play?
Yamamoto's a winger, right? You tell me.
Well, Tolvaiarvi and Yamamoto. Winners.
Yeah. So they're coming along.
They are coming along. But
do you want to tell? I didn't think he had a great World Junior tournament either, to be honest. I thought I was pretty disappointed with it.
Who?
Yamamoto.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said Tyler.
It was, but I mean, he's only 18, right? He's only 18. So you got to be gentle on the 18-year-olds and not so gentle on the 19-year-olds.
Yeah,
I'm going to be gentle on Poehling, I'm going to be gentle on Yamamoto.
Right.
Yeah, as I was gentle on Pettersson last year when he sucked, and this year he was great. So,
Well, Yamamoto, if I'm not mistaken, he doesn't get another World Junior, right? He's a late birthday.
Oh, he's late birthday. Okay.
So he's 19, and he won't be.
Even though it was just his draft year, okay.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Because of the late birthday.
And Poehling has a very early birthday. He barely even made it into the draft.
I think he's January, but...
Yeah, he's very early, because remember, he was the youngest player ever to play NCAA Division I.
Right, but early would be like September, and he's January, so he's kind of a... he's not early, he's just... actually, he's an older 99 or whatever he Yeah, an older 99.
He's way good. Holy shit, I didn't think he was that good.
Than a September 99, right, who's 7 months younger. But, I mean, even Florida, I'm looking at like a Bukestad, for instance. Like someone like that might be of interest to, again, but you're not getting bona fide number one centers, right? They're good young players, but they're not – probably going to be number one centers for Pacioretty. So it's tough. That's why you almost have to – I'm sure Vegas isn't going to give up Cody Glass, even if they are doing as well as they are, and say, well, let's go for it. You know, they just – I think that their Cinderella bubble will burst here at some point.
They don't have to be desperate. They're already achieving their goals.
True. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I always liked the Erickson Ek kid out of Minnesota. And I know I've kind of mentioned him before, and obviously Sam Bennett would be great to get from Calgary.
Right.
But
you're coming all of the names now. You get them all flowing now. And the other fellow on Calgary too, you like Jankowski, so you're flowing. You're flowing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I needed 20 minutes looking at at all the teams here. Keep babbling until I got down
babbling.
The list.
Thanks, bud.
No, I was babbling. You never babble. Does Colorado have any good young centers? I don't.
That Nathan MacKinnon's having a hell of a year.
I don't think we're getting Nate.
I'm kidding.
Reunite.
You know what, though, to mention Nathan MacKinnon for just one second, as I just did as a joke. he's the perfect example of just show a little bit of patience with these kids. I mean, he looked last year to be on the cusp of losing his way in the NHL. He was putting three consecutive 45-point seasons together. He was looking terrible, right?
Right.
So, I mean,
right.
A little bit of patience here on Jonathan Drouin, who basically was his partner in crime forever. A little bit of patience. Just wait a minute. You know, Jonathan's one draft year later. They were awesome together. For 3 years, McKinnon's in, like, the wilderness of hockey, 40 points, 45 points, 40 points. You're looking at him and deciding, as I was in September, where to put him in the in our draft guide for the pools. And thank God you talked me into lifting him up 10, 15 points, because I think I had him 150th. So, you know, and I think now he's third in the league in scoring. So a little bit of patience with the 21-year-old and the 22-year-old. They don't always find their way immediately. So I think Jonathan, for instance, maybe, you know, obviously he's playing a new position. He just got thrown under the bus by his GM, who I think handled that really, really poorly. And then after the game, he handled it like an unbelievably mature, intelligent young man. I was so proud of the way he handled it, Drouin, answering those questions, what character he showed. And he's in a new position. So, I mean, of course, give him some time to learn. Everything's new. It's hard enough for Nathan McKinnon and Jonathan Drouin at, you know, the third and fourth years of their careers to find their ways. Never mind new team, new position, bad team, new position. No goals to go around, but you're supposed to get them all. You know what I mean? So let's be patient with the kid. He's got, like, the most beautiful pair of hands, and he'll find a way to use them like he was using them in Tampa last year. It's turnaround. I think he's going to turn around next year, and I think Arturi Lehkonen is going to turn around big time next year, too. He's still playing good hockey, but he's having a real sophomore slump here.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he'd hit 20 goals. I mean, obviously,
me too. I mean,
the injury has set him back, but I mean, some guys did say, well, the sophomore slumps. Yeah, well, he ended the season so strong, you just figured he'd just be onward and upward. But once you lose your confidence, as we've seen with Pat Freddy, I mean, it's not always easy to get it back, right? And, I do believe the two of them, they're going to be 23 years old. Just entering their, I think 24 is really when you enter your two primes. So it's only an upward curve for those guys yet.
Agreed.
And,
agreed.
Hudon, I'd still like to see Hudon play with Drouin just to see. They're both there. I think they're the two most creative guys on the team.
Yeah,
And
agreed. That'd be fun.
I'd love to see,
especially
them
with nothing to lose, Grant.
Yeah, I mean, call up Sherbach. Call up Sherbach and say, here, guys.
Exactly. Here's a thought that I want to get, because, again, I follow you on Twitter and I read what you say and get curious about your thoughts on it. And I've noticed that you've been speaking a little bit about the reset. And part of the reset is you have Paul Byron in the reset. Why do you think Byron is to be traded at this point? Because hockey's a stock chart, too, and he's at the pinnacle of his stock chart? And you can get a good return, the best return possible? What's your thinking?
Oh, I think everybody, like you may have asked me at the last one, who isn't untouchable? And he's not one of the guys. I mean, it's Price and Weber.
Sure,
everybody else.
But you've gone back to Byron
right,
a couple times as if you think that there might be something there.
Well, if you can get a second-round pick.
You'd do that?
Sure.
Yeah,
I
people
mean,
forget
got,
he's 28
many,
or something.
You got too many forwards, wingers under 5'11 on this team as it is. Like it's,
yeah, but don't you think it's
like
a skating league now, and he's really kind of flourishing in a skating league?
Which is why I think you could get a second-round pick for him and try to – the Habs need to take some shots at getting some bona fide top six players. That's not Paul Byron, as much as I love the guy. He's look at his assist totals for his career.
Right.
Not a playmaker in any sense. He's going to get some breakaways and score in the odd one. They're always exciting goals, so you're always overly excited when he scores because, you know, wow, what a great, you know.
Right.
What a great
player.
They
look beautiful, yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's and I have to give it to him that they're clutch. He scored some real clutch goals, and You like how he penalty kills. I mean, you love a guy like that, right? But if you can get a top 50 pick for him and use that as a chip, because I really like the idea of them getting like 7-8 top 60 chips for this draft and identifying guys and going for it. Overpay if you have to, but get those two top 15 guys that are going to end up being first line forwards if you think they're a first line forward or a first pairing defenseman. That's what you need. That the Habs need right now is first liners. Yeah, young ones that are going to make a difference and that are going to help put this team hopefully over the top. And they'll still have like another four picks in the top 60, you know, if you have 7 or 8 to begin with and you get rid of 3 or 4 just to move up. Well,
yeah.
Then you need those assets. So if Byron can help, you know, transform you into what becomes a first line prospect, sure. If the deals are, maybe even the team, who knows, maybe. I mean, we saw it with Anta last year, you know.
Right. Yeah, but as you said, that was like the dream scenario.
Well, I mean, maybe a team offers a second and a third for Byron or 2 seconds or something like that. Well,
yeah,
that's incredible. Pretty hard to turn. That's
what
pretty
about,
hard to turn on.
What about Plekanec's return? What do you think that'll be?
Well, it was. We both talked about that today on Twitter. If you retain salary, it could be as high as a late first, I think. But realistically, a second and maybe.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Maybe a second and a third or a second and a fourth or something along those lines.
I think it would be a second and a good prospect. Like not an amazing prospect, but a second and a good prospect. Somebody that Trevor says, hey, this guy could be somebody. He's got upside. I don't know if he'll reach it, but he could be somebody. That kind of guy, because the Plekanecs of the world you're going to want in the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, look what he did to Steve Stamkos.
Yeah, I don't know. He can
Stamkos did nothing. Plekanecs, I mean, you want to have a good matchup, a good defensive forward, a guy that has the ability to shut down the other team's best. And Plekanec still does that. You know, he's underappreciated on this team because this team has been lacking in center scoring, which he doesn't have anymore. So you're like, Plekanec, you still didn't get me a damn goal. So there's really no appreciation, you know what I mean? Like if Plekanec was behind, you know, Stamkos and Tyler Johnson, I don't think there'd be any problems with that he's not scoring much, if you feel me. It's just that he's part of, like...
You waver on him, right, Brian?
Yeah.
I mean, even last week you were saying, trade him and get De La Rose in there, but then you see him check Stamkos and say, well, maybe De La Rose, you know, couldn't do that yet, right?
Exactly.
So,
and a great team would look at him and go, holy, this is the guy... You know, I don't have to worry about going 50-50 with his score and my score. I can go 70-30 if Thomas does what Thomas does, and they don't have a guy that can stop my score. Suddenly you're winning that matchup and changing the entire complexion of the series. You know, and that doesn't happen in the regular season, so there's very little appreciation for what this guy does.
What I do think, though, is that, you know, as far as the Habs go, they have a number of like potential number three centers.
Oh yeah, they don't they don't re-sign him.
And that's including Danault, who I think ideally you have in the third slot, and that he kind of inherits the Plekanec's role, you know.
Yeah.
And
going forward, the lineup for
me
is a 1C. I don't know who it is. I'm hoping, of course, it's Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I'll accept Robert Thomas.
Well, you wouldn't accept Tavares.
Oh, you don't believe that's possible, do you?
No, right? Nugent Hopkins or bust, even over Tavares. I know much, right?
No, don't put words in my mouth. I don't believe.
Well, you said, first of all, you'd like Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
I don't believe John Tavares is going to happen. That's all. That's all I'm saying. It's
no,
of course, John Tavares, is the first choice. Come on. But I don't know
with you and your Hopkins, Nugent Hopkins love. I don't know that you do that trade straight up.
Oh, man. Anyway, my choices are Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at the 1C, and I don't believe John Tavares, Felipe Mata is available. The 2C, which I'll talk over your dogs until they stop. The 2C is Paling. The 3 is Dano, and the 4 is JDLR, and that's much better hockey team than right now.
Right, right, yeah. J.D. Allard.
And
is, is that a Frenchman? J.D. Allard?
J.D. Allard, yes.
Oh,
and the, and,
I don't know
and
that.
If it is Tavares, then they win the cup.
Yeah, well. I mean, don't.
Maybe they don't win the cup, but they get close.
Yeah, exactly. I don't.
Pretty damn good.
If Tavares comes on the market, I think they're in the running, but obviously that's hoping a lot.
Very, very good friends, and I don't know what it's worth because money is always the bottom line, of which the Canadians would have a ton, but very, very good friends with Price and Weber. Extremely good friends.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man, we've, I think we talked right over Tina coming home.
Oh, yeah, it always seems to happen the last 5 minutes.
Okay, all right, I'll let you go.
Four dog night.
Yeah,
okay.
Let me sign this off officially like we're on radio or something. This has been a Habs 365 Draft Podcast. Thanks for listening.